What's going on, everybody? Welcome to a very, 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 very special edition. Hey, what is today? Wednesday, Thursday? I don't even know because it's so big. We got to do it right now, today at 8 o'clock on my regular timeline. Not even on the Whip Show podcast timeline. We are here. We're going to talk about the PWI. That's the Pro Wrestling Illustrated 500 was released today. And we're going to talk about that top 10 list. We're actually going to have the creators of the Pro Wrestling Illustrated top 500 list on the show today in about 20 minutes. We're going to bring in Candace Cordelia and Al Castle from the PWI. But right now, I got my guys from the Whip Show podcast team. I got my boy, my co-commentator, Jordan Sly Scavone. How you doing, my brother?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am always good, man. At least trying to be, dog.
Gotta do it. Gotta do it.
You know it. And we got the word heavyweight champion from this ENT and the Whip Show podcast, my dog, Mr. Joe Walker. How you feeling, Joe?
I'm feeling fine. Feeling good. Feeling great.
Man, listen. Well, before we even get into the PWI, we do got to talk about something real quick, Jordan. He is my co-commentator. This week, we got some big shows with Northwest Championship Wrestling at Troy Days, September 15th, 16th, and the 17th. I believe that's correct, or is it wrong? I don't know. I'm terrible with dates.
Tomorrow, 15, 16, 17.
Okay. Out there, just check the Facebook page, Northwest Championship Wrestling. You get all the information. We'll be out there doing what we do. And also, Jordan, we got a big show on the 29th, could you tell them a little bit about that?
I'm super excited for this show, Whip Dog. We are presenting Our Time. It is a all-women's tournament, the first in NWCW, and we'll be crowning our inaugural NWCW Women's Champion. It is currently listed as a 12-women tournament, but surprises are always in store. I don't want to give anything away, but you never know who else is going to show up and how many people are going to actually be in this tournament. But by the end of the night... By the end of the night, we will have the first ever women's champion. Let me say, it's a pretty belt. It's a pretty belt.
So, very much so. As you sip on your Care Burners coffee or special juice or whatever that is, dog.
It's coffee.
Should I sing it? Okay. Should I sing it?
Go right ahead.
No, I'm not gonna do it. I'll say it for a different show.
Okay. Well, guys, like I said, we're here to talk about the Pro Wrestling Illustrated 500. They actually released it today, the top 10 list of the PWI 500. Candace Cordelia and Al Castle, who are contributors to the Pro Wrestling Illustrated, were on Busted Open Radio this morning, and they dropped it. And let's just go over the list, okay? I want to go right to the list.
I do have the whole list open as well.
Well, we're not going to read all 500.
No. But if someone comes up and we want to know where they are, I can check.
For sure, man. Well, before we actually go over the list, Jordan, earlier today you had the requirements to be picked to be in this list. Could you read that to our listeners
real quick? Yeah. So the credentials that they're looking at are mostly within kayfabe, which is actually what I do like about this list is that it's based on what you're seeing on TV. It's not, based on anything else like that. It's the win-loss record, championships won, quality of competition, major feuds, prominence within the wrestler's promotions, and overall wrestling ability. Okay. And honestly, that's one of the things I do really like about this list versus other lists is, if someone won 5 championships in 1 year, that makes a difference versus how good they are from a technical standpoint or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now I'm going to tell you, I told Jordan earlier, Joe, I don't know if I ever told you, but I actually have a personal connection to the PWI 500. I was number 420 back in 2012.
Woo! Mr. 420 himself.
You better believe it, Daddy. The whole whipping show. You understand?
Well, Will made the list, y'all.
Just one time, but yes, I did make the list one time.
It doesn't surprise me.
Now, Jordan, speaking of the list, if you could run down the first five from 10 to 5, and we want to talk about those a little bit, please.
From down up.
Yes.
All right, so coming in at number 10, just making it in, the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes. Number 9, from Impact Wrestling, Mr. On My Shirt right now, Josh Alexander. Number 8, Pockets himself, Orange Cassidy. Mm-hmm. Number 7, Kazuchika Okada, which I might say is one of my favorite names to say in professional wrestling.
Incredible.
And number 6, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, MJF.
Now, right there, I have a bone to pick with PWI. But before I do that, Joe, you heard the first 5. What do you think about that?
It's interesting. It's interesting. When it comes to lists, I really try to refrain from being incredibly critical because it is based on somebody else's opinion. While they do have their credentials, that determines how they rank these professional wrestlers. It's still based on someone that did, a group of people that did not include me. So for me to find fault with it, to be upset with anything, I can't really do that. If I was creating that list, if this was my, 10 through 6, would it be different? I think it would. Cody wouldn't be on my team. I would have to assume that his victory over Brock, which was an excellent match, very hard hitting and compelling, got him on that list. While he's done some things over the course of his WWE return run, that has been the most prominent one to me.
Joe, I'm going to cut you off for 1 second.
Yeah.
Because this list's timing ended on July 31st. Which makes Cody and Brock SummerSlam match not included.
Ooh. And I want to jump in there too. I was listening to them on Busted Open earlier, and that was one thing that we're very big on, because Bully Ray picked Cody as his number one guy. Mm. But Candace and Al both said that the time that Cody was out injured is why he didn't get higher on the list.
Okay.
I 100% agree. I'm going to go with you, Joe. This year, July 2022 to July 2023, I wouldn't have put Cody on the list either, on the top 10, which is hard for me to say because Cody is in my top 5 favorite wrestlers currently.
Yeah.
But he was injured for most of the year.
But see, that's where I got a problem at already. I get he was injured. But you're telling me Cody's impact is going to automatically put him in the top 5? I mean, the boy, listen, from the day he came into WWE until now, and I know they got their little time frame, they schedule or whatever, they allotted time to be supposed to put it in. That man has been fire. He's the number one guy. Yes, main event Jey Uso is doing his thing now, but for the 6 months that he was there, it was just Cody, man. So I don't know how you put Cody so low in the rankings, man. And I want to say this too while we're sitting there. Also, you telling me Maxwell Jacob Friedman is number 6? Maxwell is like one of the top wrestlers in the whole world of professional wrestling. He is what did they say about Roman? A needle mover. That's exactly what Maxwell Jacob Friedman is. Yes, Maxwell as well had a time that he was not on the show. But during that period of time, we were worried about, when will Maxwell come back? When will he come back? That is very important, in my opinion, why he should definitely been higher on the list, man.
Well, and when he did come back, he won championships. He had multiple feuds. Cody hasn't won a championship, so that automatically cuts out one of the qualifiers. I'm agreeing that MJF should be higher. MJF should be top 5, in my opinion.
Just talking about Cody, Cody has a special place in my household because my son, shout out King Manny Fresh, is very much a fan of Cody Rhodes. And he is not a regular professional wrestler watcher. While he does enjoy some of the things he sees here and there, this is somebody that he will go out of his way to watch. And that says a lot. So Cody's influence ranks him high. But like you said, he's missing one of the credentials. He hasn't held a title, but his influence, I can't argue that. I can't argue his influence at all.
No, and I have, like I said, a very strong emotional connection to Cody. He's my three-year-old's first favorite wrestler. And I've always liked it from generic legacy to dashing, undashing mustache, you know, all versions. I love Stardust. He was dumb, but I loved it. All versions of Cody have excelled it to me personally, which is why, like I said, why, you know, not putting him in the top 10 would be hard for me. But this year, I think I would put him at 11 just to appease my soul. But given this year, given the injury, the lack of titles, even his win-loss record hasn't been very good this year. And if you're looking at it from a kayfabe position, I would have put him at 11 just to appease my inner soul. But I don't think he would have cracked my 10.
Okay. Now, Jordan, you talked earlier about wearing the shirt of Impact Wrestling's own Josh Alexander.
Amazing.
I definitely think this is probably the highest he's ever been ranked, if I'm not mistaken.
I will double check that. But I also think so.
But, Joe, what do you think about Josh Alexander even breaking the top 10? I mean, they always say Impact Wrestling is the best show that nobody watches. And that's not due to Impact Wrestling. That's due to the fact that it's on a network a lot of people don't have. You either have to have Sling or Fight or some other type of format to be able to watch
it. Plus, you could watch it the day after.
Exactly. But what do you think about that, Joe? Him making the top 10 with such amazing workers?
I watch Impact on YouTube. Go back and watch the clips and highlights when I can't catch, you know, find a full episode. Josh Alexander has been, exemplary when you think of someone being consistent in their growth. And the way they worked him into the show as they continued to progress him toward the world championship, man, that was a sight to behold, man. You talk about some good television, some good wrestling and storytelling. They're amazing. So I definitely think, for me, I would rank him high. So to see him on the list, I'm not surprised by that at all.
I pulled up the ratings for the last couple of years. So this was Josh's ascent. So 2019, he was number 210. 2020, 195, not much of a jump. 2021, he went from 2021, he went from 195 to 107. From 107 to 14, from 14 to 9. And I think if Josh wasn't injured, part of this period would have been higher. I don't know if he would have cracked top 5, maybe 7, maybe 6, but I think he would have been higher if he wasn't injured for, and it wasn't a very long time, but it was at a really important time in his character's progression. You know, he was champ at the time. So he never lost the belt, and he hasn't had a chance to win it back or have a chance to win it back yet. So I think he probably would have been, you know, higher. I do.
Now, Jordan, you actually had a first eye view of Josh Alexander when you did some work down there with Impact Wrestling here recently.
Yeah, congratulations on that, Jordan.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
How do you feel the audience receives Josh Alexander, man? Do you think they receive him as a star?
Easily one of the biggest reactions is for Josh Alexander. And he didn't even, when I was there, the shows that I was at, he didn't even wrestle. He came out and he promoed. He did do a fight, you know, he brawled and stuff like that, but he didn't have a proper match. And the second his music hits, the second he comes on stage, you know, to compare it to WWE, it's like when Cody comes out. You know, there's a similar vibe amongst the Impact faithful to Josh Alexander that Cody gets.
Now, there's another gentleman on the list, Okada. Now, myself, I'm not a huge foreign overseas wrestling fan. I watch it from time to time if I see clips, but I don't go out of my way to see the programming. What do you guys think about Okada making it so high on the list? Is he that star?
I think so. And I'm also, I love Japanese wrestling, but I don't have time for Japanese wrestling. So I watch when I can, you know, when I hop in and that sort of thing. And I do think, you know, if you look at Okada's past things, past times on the list, 2016, number two, 2017, number one, three, five, six, 25, two, seven, like he's always up there. He's literally the lowest he's been is 286. And that was in 2011. Since then, he's only not been in the top 10 twice.
But do you think they just pacified him because they have to have a Japanese worker on the list, just like they got Vikingo at number five? And I'm like, come on, dog. Yes, Vikingo is an amazing worker, but on the PWI 500, that high? Hell no.
With Okada, I don't think so. I think Okada deserves that spot. You know, he really is the person who, especially over here, holds new American viewers to New Japan. You know, you might go for a talent you know. You know, you might have went over there, oh, I will watch Kenny Omega. I wanted to watch Cody when he was over there, but you stay for Okada.
Okay.
Mm.
Joe, your thoughts on Okada?
Yeah, all right.
See? That says it all.
Okay, I'm underselling. I'm underselling. That was disrespectful to what he's accomplished. He has worked hard for the reputation that he has. I give him that. He's had some matches where maybe the pacing in the matches was not what I enjoy. I enjoy in a slower paced match, I enjoy more grappling, more mat wrestling, and his slower paced matches, it's a lot more position. So, you know, he kind of loses me there. But when it comes to a finale, when it comes to the last 5-6 minutes of a match, that dude is boom, 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 boom. And I can't
take my eyes off of it, man.
I 100% agree there. 100% agree there.
Can't take my eyes off. He is like once he, if you sat there that long, and it's just like when you watch I'll compare it to watching a slow movie. And you get to the point where you just want the movie to be over. You're like, I just want to see how this ends. And then it ramps up at the end. You're like, oh. And then it's over. You're like, okay, that was worth it. That's kind of how I feel about his matches. You know, if you can take sitting through the pace to get to that, the end of the story, it's worth it. He don't send you away like, oh man, I wasted my time.
Well, I wanted to get into this a little later, but I guess I'm gonna bring it up right now. We haven't went into the top five yet, but a gentleman that didn't make the top 10 list that I am totally taken aback from is Will Ospreay. The idea that this man is truly a world traveler. I mean, the boy just got the all-in attendance, or the fake attendance, tattooed on his arm. You know what I'm saying?
Where do you think he is?
Where do I think he is?
Like where, not personally, but on the list. Where do you think he is on the list?
I take...
Because I got it open.
I take Okada out. I put him in there like number six. Yeah. Okay. And you know what? We were talking
Where do you think earlier. Where do you think he is this year? Where do you think he's at, though? Like listed.
If he's not in the top 15, that's crazy.
What is he, 12?
17.
Will Ospreay, the man literally has worked for damn near every promotion.
Yeah. Claudio Camello, Samoa Joe, Danielson, all over him.
Okay, I want you, now somebody give me an explanation. So that's why I want to get Candace and those guys in here. See how you're just shaking your head? Oh, and we got one of them in. We got Al Castle coming in right now, right on time. But I want to talk about that, man, because like I said, he's worked AEW. He's worked Impact Wrestling, coming up from Bound for Glory. He's did stuff with WWE. It's just, I don't know. Hold on, but let me get him on here. And as I told you guys earlier, we actually have some of the contributors to help put this PWI 500 top 10 list together. I want to introduce Mr. Al Castle. How you doing today, sir?
What's up, guys? How are you? I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
We're doing good, man. We're just already arguing about the show, the list, but it's all good, man.
I'm not arguing, Al.
He's just trying to,
We are politely considering.
Yeah, yeah, it kind of describes the meeting where we put the 500 together. Yes, it was contentious at times.
I can imagine, man. And first of all, by the way, Al, great job with you and Candace earlier today on Busted Open Radio. I listened to what you guys did, amazing delivery. And salute to you. I love them guys over there, LaGreca, everybody. You guys stay strong when Bully tried to bully you. I like you, man. You guys are awesome, man.
Thank you, Al. Yeah.
Hey, listen, if you got whipped, if he pointing that finger at you, you're doing it right. So, otherwise, he's just sitting there with his arms down. But when he started giving you that, yeah, you did good.
Well, real quick, Al, before we go a little bit further, because we're going to touch on to the top five, but we talked about it earlier, but kind of explain how you guys came up with the list, especially that top 10, which is obviously the part that everybody really goes crazy about.
Yeah, sure. So I've been now a part of the last 17 PWI 500s. So that's just about half of all of them are in the 33rd year now. And it is a meeting of the minds every year. You know, the first several years I was part of it, it required driving, you know, several hours to PWI headquarters in Bluebell, Pennsylvania, where we would sit down and we would hash it out over several hours. Last several years, it's become more like this, a virtual meeting. There's a committee of eight of us, you know, with a lot of different perspectives, a lot of diversity in the room there, a lot of experience in terms of covering the wrestling business. And we hash it out. There are years like, and I wrote about this in the magazine, there have been years where it's been easy. You know, last year we sat down and I think within seconds, we all knew Roman Reigns was going to be number one. This year was a lot harder. You know, this was and again, having been part of 17 of these now, this is the hardest time I can remember deciding on a number one. And when we all got together, we all came in there. I think everybody comes into the meeting kind of with their own list in mind. And sometimes you arrive at something that's pretty close. And sometimes you go there and people are couldn't be, you know, more on a different page. And I think there was a lot of that this year, with a lot of folks saying, you know, a name would come up and people would say, nope, no way I'm voting for that guy. And there were a few people who fit that bill. And, you know, with Seth, he was a name that came up early. And because you've had, you know, these big giant stars like Roman Reigns and MJF, who were dominant world champions in their promotions, when Seth came up, it was sort of like, nah, I can't be Seth. And so we moved through it. We just, you know, discussed a lot of names. About an hour or more passed. And by then we're usually well into the list and we hadn't put down a single name on the list. And then after going through all these names and really kind of dissecting a lot of, you know, real sort of fatal flaws with a lot of these guys, you know, not all the people pretty much who we were discussing at being number one ended up near number one. They're, you know, pretty much all in the top 10. But for that number one spot, it is so coveted. It is so prestigious. We wanted to make sure we had it right. And when we read Seth's name later on, it felt right to all of us. I mean, he, you know, I think we all see him as sort of the workhorse of WWE. And they created that new world title. With that in mind, Roman doesn't wrestle very much. And, you know, Seth is really out there night after night on big shows, on little shows, on house shows, defending that title, giving 100% effort every time he steps into the ring. And so at the end of the day, we arrived at that consensus, and I think we all feel pretty good about it.
Nice, man. You really sold that right there. I love it. Why you believe in Seth? And since we're right there, Jordan, could you go ahead and read the top five?
Top five, number five. El Hijo del Vikingo. Number four, the Ring General Gunther. Number three, John Moxley. Number two, Roman Reigns. And number one, Seth freaking Rollins. This isn't the first time the Shield have been 1, 2, and 3, right? That's happened before.
You know, I'm not sure. If it has, I'm not aware of it. And
now I have to double check.
And it's never been intentional, nor was it this year. And I think it was, I don't even think it was at that meeting. Maybe later on somebody noticed it, or maybe it was at the very tail end of the meeting. Somebody pointed it out. And it really, it does speak to, you know, this faction of three newcomers that only debuted, what, 11 years ago, how incredibly important they've been in the wrestling industry and how much success they've each individually achieved in two different companies.
And I don't know if you saw it earlier today, Seth actually posted the Shield doing a fist bump, the three of them together.
I saw that. Yeah, that was dope, man. I retweeted that. That's really awesome. Yeah. And I think it's the only thing that Seth tweeted about it. And it's cool that he doesn't just see it as an achievement for himself, but I think acknowledges, as he should, that it really speaks to what the three of these guys, and also worth pointing out, I believe all of them have been number one now.
Yes.
I know Roman had a couple times. I think Moxley was once, and Seth now the only the second person ever to do it three times behind John Cena.
Now, Al, you talked about earlier on the Busted Open show today, that room, how serious it was battling against Roman. Because I'm going to tell you, as soon as you guys announced it, I went into our group chat and we were going back and forth just like you guys were on air today. But could you really tell me, like, how many people was, like, really fighting for Roman? Because if I'd have been in that room, I'd have been throwing my one up all the way around.
You know, I don't want to exaggerate too much that it was fighting for it. I mean, I think there were certainly people, and I'll say it, I was one of them who came into the room thinking, yeah, this guy's our number one, right? And got some resistance from people, you know, and I understood it right away. I mean, the points that were being brought up against Roman were entirely valid. And, you know, the issue is activity. And the reality that the guy just doesn't wrestle very much at all. You know, we've got a standard for activity, which I think is 10 matches throughout the evaluation period or one match in 6 different months, right? So you could make it with as few as 6 matches if they're spread out over the year. And Roman got there, you know, with room to spare. So I don't want to exaggerate too much, but the reality is, I mean, I think he had something like 7 title defenses throughout the whole year. Not a lot. All of them are huge, and that's kind of the conundrum with Roman is that in some ways it was his biggest year, his best year. It was the year that he really went, I think, from just being the best guy in WWE or in all of wrestling right now to an all-time great. You know, now when you're talking the longest world title reign in close to 40 years, retaining at his third consecutive WrestleMania, all these milestones that he's achieving. And beyond that, because, I mean, granted, in this business, you know, those decisions are made above, you know, Roman's pay grade. But beyond that, there were just the intangibles that he's great. He's awesome. He's a legit draw. He's fantastic at everything he does. So yeah, me and I think some others went in there thinking this has got to be. Other people felt strongly otherwise. He ended up at number 2. So I mean, it's not that we buried him or anything like that. And I think we're all at peace with where we arrived.
Al, I have to ask you this. And considering how long you guys deliberate to come up with this list of 500 professional wrestlers ranked, before you go into this process, is there any discussion of not taking the final decisions personally for the sake of maintaining your camaraderie and a peaceful working environment?
Absolutely. And I think that's why the committee system really works. And it's because the reality is, you know, we all strive to be objective and fair and balanced and all that for sure. But the reality is that everybody has their favorites. They have their biases. They have people they really like. They have people they really don't like. I know every year there's, you know, for everybody in the committee, a name that comes up where it's like, oh, really? Like, we have to rank this guy. And that's where the committee system really kind of works, because it's balanced out by everybody else. So if you're somebody who doesn't like this guy, you know, it's not that you're going to get kind of muted or canceled out, but it's that you're going to be part of a discussion where maybe, you know, you're brought around. And That was certainly the case again with our number one this year, where it took a lot of discussion to arrive at that consensus. You know, the flip side of it, you know, you talk about somebody maybe who we have some somebody's got some animosity or something toward. You know, the flip side that is very, and I think this happens more often, is that you've got people championing somebody, right? Like, you know, this person really needs to be in the top 20, the top 50, and other people, it's not that they'd be opposed to it, but maybe it doesn't come to mind, or maybe they're not as aware of them. And so it you know, it's kind of an education process. The 500, as much as it is, I think, the hardest job that we all take on every year, it's also in a lot of ways sort of the most fun and the most rewarding, because what it entails is watching a whole lot of wrestling, right? So especially when you dig in, you know, later in the 500, you know, in some ways I'm robbed of that, because I do the top 10, and I think I wrote up through like 25 this year. So I'm basically dealing with people that I'm pretty familiar with. But over the years, you know, I've done them well into the hundreds, and then it's like, who's this guy? And you got to do your homework, and you, you know, you discover a lot of like amazing talent.
Hold up, Al. Don't say that. Back in 2012, Rip Dog was number 420. I mean, go back to the archives. I think it's the number 420 back in 2012, man.
Not bad. Congratulations. And, you know, I'm glad you bring that up, because, you know, so much of the attention is paid to who's number one, who's number two, who's in the top 10. You know, we're not under any delusion that, you know, Seth Rollins is going to go throw a party tonight or crack open a bottle of champagne or anything like that. But I know for those guys in deep in the list, you know, and we hear from them. I got a text message earlier today from somebody asking if somebody was on the made the 500, and it didn't. And it's actually happened a couple times today. And, you know, I feel that, like, I know that for somebody who was working really hard to make a name for themselves in the business, making the 500 can mean a whole lot, and being left off the 500 can hurt a whole lot.
I'm actually glad you said that, because I think I told you earlier, I had Candace on the show previously, and one question I asked her was like, do you realize you guys really can help move a person's career totally forward? Like, you guys are very powerful in this whole wrestling space, man. And how does that feel personally?
Yeah, no, we don't take it for granted. And again, especially like with independent wrestlers just starting out, I know it's hugely important. And I always hear the story. I think Chris Jericho tells the story of somebody who had like a ring jacket made with like their 500 rankings on it, which is kind of hilarious. You know, some wrestlers have like kind of incorporate as part of their gimmick. And I'll also say, I mean, I talked about, you know, Seth not cracking open a bottle of champagne. That said, even on that level, it people who are certain, you know, somebody who's a very, very top name in the business was counting on being number one, even had, I think, a whole storyline set involving him being number one, and he didn't make it number one, and he wasn't happy about it. I know it does mean a lot, and because of that, we take it super serious. You know, we get and that this is going to cause debate every year, and it's fine. And you know, we've got thick skin, and I always say, like, we sincerely appreciate constructive criticism, and that's how we find stuff that we missed. And there have been years where one that comes to mind, I think this was before my time, I remember there was a year we didn't rank Owen Hart, and it was just like, how did we miss Owen Hart? And sometimes that just happens. So we absolutely appreciate the criticism. You know, is it sometimes what we don't like, I think, is any suggestion that we're flippant about it, because we're not, you know, the conversation this morning with the guys on Busted Open, and those guys are all great. And I think at the end of the day, we all had an understanding with each other. The one thing that perturbed me a little bit before we even began the conversation, I think Tommy talked about it, Tommy Dreamer, was the notion that, you know, one of, if not the most important factor in us determining, number one, is how many magazines are we going to sell? You know, who goes on the cover? And I can't emphasize enough how unimportant that is. Is it discussed? You know, sure. I mean, is a Roman Reigns maybe going to sell more magazines on the cover than a Josh Alexander? Sure. It's not going to be, not even, you know, one of the deciding factors. It'll have zero bearing on the decision process, you know, if only because we can do whatever we want with the cover, right? I mean, like, we can put all of them on the cover, and we've done that. I mean, there are years that, you know, you still don't know who is number one until you flip it open, because we'll feature a bunch of people on the cover with, like, the question, who's number one this year? So it really has zero bearing, and we, you know, this isn't the only list. It's not. It's no more or less valid than any list you guys would put together. But it is something that we take super seriously. And, you know, none of us are at all sort of dismissive. And that's why, you know, we end up in these long, drawn out discussions trying to choose a number one. I mean, if we didn't care, it would just be like, oh, whatever, you know, we'd leave it to the editor, Kevin McElvaney, put whoever you want in there. And that's not how it happened. In fact, you know, a lot of the arguing back and forth this year was with Kevin McElvaney, our editor-in-chief, and he didn't agree with some of us, and we didn't agree with him. You know, at the end of the day, it was going to be his call. But you know, he also saw to it that we arrived at a consensus.
Al, I have a question for you. I check out the list every year, but I don't like follow all the credentials or the reasonings every time. Individual tag team wrestlers are often not featured, correct? Because they're more of a unit.
Yeah, this is a really good point, and one I was hoping would come up in Busted Open. So happy to discuss it here. One of the things in my time at PWA 500 that I'm super proud of, it's sort of my baby, is the tag team. I think it was 50. And I think last, I think we started at 25. And I think last year it was 50 or something like that, but it is its own list. We're now going to be going into the third year of it. And that was addressing some of these very issues, because we struggled every year with the reality that you could be a Matt or a Nick Jackson and be, by, you know, every metric, a top guy in the sport, paid as a top guy, a top attraction. You think about the Bucks back in 2018-19, when AEW was first getting started. They were some of the, you know, these stories about them selling out their shirts and Hot Topping and all that. These guys were like legit top guys. But how do you measure them against singles wrestlers? It was just sort of apples and oranges. And, you know, tag team wrestlers are still on this list. But I think having their own list now gives us a little breathing room where we don't have to fret so much about where do we put a Jey Uso or where do we put a Dax Harwood or something like that. We know, you know, they can be buried somewhere in the 50s or 100s in the 500. Very likely they're going to be in the top five in their own list.
Yeah, because I was thinking, you know, in my brain when I was going through who I would have put in my top 10, you know, one of the early contenders that popped out to me was Jey Uso, you know, between his matches and his storylines and all that stuff. So I was almost wondering, because of how the Bloodline story went this past year, did the Usos almost creep in as individuals this year?
I don't think so. And I think it really gets into the evaluation period, which was July 1st of last year to July 31st of this year. So most of that time, Jay was really doing the tag team thing. I think the very tail end of that is when, you know, he formally seceded from the Bloodline. Mm-hmm. His match with Roman Reigns at SummerSlam wouldn't even be part of this.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's really been his singles run. It has been, you know, again, early in the summer until now. I expect him to do real well next year. I mean, if he keeps going at this clip, I wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, be in the top 10 ranking next year. You know, that depends on a lot of things. And that's, you know, one of the real tricky things with this list is that so much of everybody's success to some extent is out of their hands, right? It's like you can be great. You can be awesome at what you do. Your success to some extent is going to be determined by somebody else. And you know, ironically, Seth Rollins, who is no better a wrestler this year than he was last year or the year before that, Seth hasn't been in the top 10 for years. I mean, I think it's been something like, 3-5 years since he's been in the top 10. And why was that? It's because he was a heel. And he was booked as a typical heel who lost a lot. And in as much as, you know, win-loss record is an important part of the criteria for us, you know, Seth just wasn't winning matches for a number of years. You know, he made the turn this year, has gone on a run beating everybody, and finds himself at number one this year.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you this question off the record, even though we're on camera, so it's
off the record. Yeah.
Tell the truth, man. Did my dog MJF text you yet? Like, hey, bro, how am I number six, man? Because you know he's going to say something on social media.
He hasn't texted me. and just as well. And yeah, I mean, if he knew I was a fellow Long Islander, I might be hearing from him. Yeah, I get it. I mean, like it was one of the decisions this year that we knew might be a little controversial, having him as low as we do at number six. You know, when it was sort of kind of like eye opening to me, the discussion that was had on Busted Open before we went on today, where they were all giving their picks.
Oh, so and, you did hear all that before?
Yeah, most of it. Yeah, and at least one of them. I think Dave had MJF number one, and other guys had him in that mix. And me listening, I'm thinking, oh boy, you know. And I get it, right? I mean, like a successful long term, you could say, dominant champion in his company, young, super talented. I can't say enough, you know, good things about MJF. I'm a fan, a big fan. It's the same issue as Roman, and it was just an issue of activity. And I think actually Roman had more title defenses than MJF did. Now MJF also won the championship in November, where Roman had it before that. But I think in that window, was it six, you know, title matches or something like that, he wasn't working a whole lot. I mean, he was on TV a whole lot and being super entertaining, but in terms of like going out there, wrestling, defending the title, you know, since the end of the valuation period, again, if we were judging right now, I imagine he'd do a good deal better coming off of some July 31st. There wasn't a whole lot there.
Okay. Now, I do want to ask you this real quick, and I kind of talked to the guys before you got on the show, and just a straight-up direct answer. You had Vikingo and Okada both in the top 10 list. In total transparency, did you do that truly because they hit the criteria, or you want to also make sure that you had international talent in the top 10 list?
I don't think that they're mutually exclusive. Absolutely, they meet the criteria. You know, PWI has what it recognizes as a world championship, and our editor-in-chief, Kevin McElvaney, has opened this up in the last few years for many, many years, and even decades before that. It was an especially exclusive a club. You know, you're basically talking WWE world title, WCW, once upon a time, AWA, briefly ECW, briefly TNA, and then we revoked the world title a status. Kevin's got a different view of it, and he's opened it up some. And I think most people agree with the world titles that we now recognize, and the AAA mega title won by Vikingo, and the IWGP world title that was for a time worn by Okada are recognized world titles. And it's interesting, you know, even though we publish the United States, we're essentially an American magazine. We do cover the world of pro wrestling as much as we can. We certainly strive to do that. That includes Japan and Mexico, where pro wrestling is a huge part of the culture. And Vikingo, I think people are still getting to know some, right? And I think like we were with Mystico, whatever it was, 15, 16 years ago, I'd like to think we've been ahead of the curve with Vikingo. We had Vikingo in our top 10 last year before most American fans saw him because he hadn't gotten his visa yet. Over the last year, you know, people have finally seen what he can do in AEW and some other American promotions. Okada, may go down as the greatest Japanese wrestler of all time. I mean, he's already on the Mount Rushmore over there. I'm a huge Okada guy. You know, one of the great honors I had was interviewing him when he made number one on our list, whatever that was, 6-7 years ago. He was the first Japanese wrestler and the only Japanese wrestler until now to be number one. So absolutely, both guys deserve to be in the top 10. And yes, it's also a recognition that, we're not just an American wrestling magazine.
Yeah, well, and again, one of the categories is prominence within their individual's promotion. And I was saying Whip earlier, you know, when American viewers tune into New Japan for the first time, and maybe they're coming because an American guy's going over there or something like that, they'll go for that person, but they stay for Okada.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, Okada, I've had the privilege of seeing him in person a few times now, including that Madison Square Garden show that they ran a couple of years ago. And he really is something special. He's like, you know, when I talk to non-wrestling fan friends of mine, he is one of those guys that, like, you got to see Okada. I mean, he really is so exciting. I don't doubt he'll make it to the top of the list again. You know, it's funny because now he's sort of entering this realm where he's kind of like the seasoned veteran. And some people are thinking like, whoa, he's starting to get over the hill. I think he's 35. I mean, it's incredible that he's achieved all that he has, and he's still in his mid-30s. He could easily go for another 10, 15 years. He's changed his style a little bit, and his role in New Japan has shifted some, where he is now more in that role of helping establish other guys. But, you know, he headlined another Tokyo Dome, won the world title, again at Wrestle Kingdom, another G1 climax that was all in the evaluation period. So yeah, he absolutely belongs. I mean, if anything, you can make an argument that he should be higher.
For sure. Now, Al, yeah. We don't want to keep you. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry, Jordan. Go ahead.
I just have one more, and I'm curious about this, and I'm going to go out of the top 10 for a second. Because as I was scrolling through, what really caught my eye was number 15. Which is personally one of my current favorite performers in Impact, is Masha Slamovich. And I'm curious about the few women that did make it onto the list. How does that happen, I guess? Obviously, because I know that you've been doing the women's list for the last 2 or 3 years now, right?
No, more than that. I mean, it's grown. I mean, I think we're probably at least 10 years now.
Oh, is it that deep in now? Okay, good.
Yeah, because I remember Michelle McCool being part of one of the lists. So, okay. So it's got to be well beyond
that.
It
wasn't just the year she came back in the Rumble and dominated?
No. Yeah, I don't know how she'll do this year. I talked earlier about, you know, some people on the committee really kind of championing some wrestlers. I think Masha is a good example of that. Mm-hmm. You know, honestly, not everybody on the committee super familiar with her work. And we might only know her from her work at Impact. And in reality, she's an incredibly prolific wrestling star, competing all over the place, winning important titles and tournament and working with men, you know, and you know, it's more involved than that, but super simplified. I think that's sort of the threshold for women to break on this list. And that is that they're essentially competing with the same competition with that everybody else is. So and you're seeing more and more of that now. You know, it whatever it was 20 years ago, China working with Jeff Jarrett was this crazy, wacky novelty freak show. And now it's not uncommon at all to see a men and women working together, you know, still not necessarily on the biggest stages. You know, WWE hasn't gotten there yet. AEW really hasn't. Impact has been a little more, I don't know if progressive is the word, because some people will still very much kind of frown upon that. Yeah, I mean, Masha becomes the highest ranked woman in the history of PWI 500. And again, I think that's absolutely and again, it's a committee that arrived at a consensus, but there were certainly voices on that committee championing her. And I think it's worth mentioning, you know, one of the evolutions that PWI has gone through in the last several years under Kevin, Kevin's watch, is having more women at the table. That's not something that we've always had over the years in big numbers. And now, you know, Candace included, you know, we've got more diversity in our committee. And so, you know, where some other people on the committee might have blinders to certain things, they see certain things and they bring them up. And absolutely happy to see Masha where she is.
Oh no! Like I said, I was scrolling through, and I was like, "Oh, hello, you're there," in a good way. It was a good, "Oh, hi, hello there." Does that, no spoilers, does that telegraph the women's though, or no?
No, because the women's list, and that's also a good point. You know, they really are separate universes. The women's list, you're essentially talking about, you are going to have, and I don't know, I should know. I think I've got a list somewhere, but off the top of my head, I don't know where Masha is on the, what is now the women's 250. I think it keeps on growing and growing every year. But I'd say where you are on one list is not necessarily representative of where you are on the other list, because the women's list essentially exclusively will look at women competing with other women, right?
Okay.
And so I, you know, and some of it, it's like, it's not exactly scientific. What do you do with somebody who so much of their competition has been against men? But I wouldn't take too much from where she is on the 500.
Sweet.
Cool.
Now, one last thing I want to ask you real quick, Al. With the top 10 list, you got it for this year, but looking forward, going next year, I know it's a little early, but who are some of the people you think that's going to kind of break through to the top 10 next year?
Yeah, it's always a really interesting question. We're recording the PWI podcast tomorrow, where we're going to discuss it, and that's usually a question that we talk about. And, you know, if you're just playing the odds, you know, a familiar face, a Roman Reigns, and obviously we have no idea. It's what they do between now and July of next year. Is, you know, does Roman drop the title at WrestleMania and then take a long time off? In which case you might see him really tumble quite a bit down. You got to think Cody Rhodes is in the mix, right? I mean, Cody just made it barely into the top 10 this year in that number 10 spot. A guy that Bully Ray thought would be number one. And, you know, for a number of years, I think there's been that expectation that Cody will make that number one spot. But, you know, he gets right there and just doesn't quite make it. So it was, you know, hard to justify having him much higher than he was, given that he missed the first half of the evaluation period, lost at WrestleMania. But, you know, if he goes at the pace that he's going, he continues on, let's say goes into the Rumble, wins the Rumble, goes to Mania, finishes the story and then has even a few month long run with some defenses, I think he'd be in a good position to be up there high. MJF, you know, if steps up the activity a little bit, and I think he has just in the last few weeks, I think he'll do real well. And then there are dark horses, you know, Jey Uso is an interesting one. Does Seth hold on to this title right through next year and keep the activity level that he does now? You know, does Bryan Danielson make another run at the AEW title? There's all kinds of questions. You know, I'm such a huge Josh Alexander fan. I got to go to Victory Road last week, his first singles match in a while. The guy is incredible, right? And it's so interesting to me, you know, how much higher he could have been this year were he to stayed healthy the whole time. Now back, looking amazing. Who knows, right? Between now and next year. So
it's exactly what I said before you came on.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've got the Okadas and you've got the Vikingos, you know, Gunther, who I think is, what is he this year? Number four.
Yeah.
Four. You know, you got to think he's in that world title picture somewhere in WWE. People talk about him as a potential Royal Rumble winner, a potential world heavyweight title challenger at WrestleMania, already the longest reigning IC champion. Just fantastic. All these guys, you know, I'm, you know, barring, and it's the wrestling business, right? So who knows when a knee blows out, you know, a bicep blows out, something like that, and then a guy is on the shelf. So who knows?
Well, Al, before we get out of here, I want to throw the PWI. We're going to take that, put it to the side. There's one last segment I like to do with people that I interview. It's called the Mark Out Moment. And that's not saying that you go crazy. You're like, oh, my God, I met such and such. But you've been in this business for many years now, writing a PWI. Has there ever been one moment you're like, damn, I can't believe this is my life. I'm kicking it with such and such. Have you ever had that moment, man? What would be your Mark Out Moment?
Oh,
even if
man.
It was internal.
You know, anytime I'm ringside for a show, it's great. I've never been a guy to spend a ton of money on tickets. I'm always like a nosebleed seat guy. Just want to be in the building. You know, because of what I do over the years, I've had some opportunities to have the best seat in the house, and those are super cool. Especially if like I could take my kid or something like that, and then they're super impressed. I remember going to an NXT show in the theater at Madison Square Garden. This has got to be, I don't know, 7-8 years ago.
I'd say that's got to be Black and Gold brand.
Yeah, gold time, it was yeah. When Nakamura was still in NXT. And and I show up and I'm like front row, ringside, center, the you know, the best seat in the house. And what really drove that home is I look a few rows behind me and there's Shane McMahon. And I never think like, look, I got better seats than the boss's kid, you know? So that's super
awesome.
Cool. So, you know, less about, I've met most of my heroes. I got, you know, one that comes to mind was interviewing Steve Austin a few years back when we gave him the Stanley Weston Award, which is sort of PWI's Lifetime Achievement Award. And, you know, the phone rings and it's Steve Austin on the other line. Super cool. One of my heroes. I grew up a huge Ultimate Warrior.
Looks like he froze up just a little.
I know. I wonder if did we permanently lose him that time?
Wait a minute. I think he's coming back in. Hold on.
Nope.
Okay, there you are. Can you hear us?
Yes. Don't know if I lost for a little while there.
Last thing we heard you say was, I'm a huge Ultimate Warrior. Fuh.
Yeah. And
I'm assuming fan was the word, didn't want to put words in your mouth.
Yes, that is it. And you know, short story, I got to meet him a number of years ago before his passing. And that was both cool and also he was a little bit of he lived up to his reputation, so you know what they say about that, don't meet your heroes, but it was still neat, and I got a picture of me and the Warriors somewhere around here.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
George, do you have anything else on?
I got the ones I wanted to do. It's been awesome talking to you and, you know, hearing directly, you know, from the room where it happened, so to speak. It was great.
Well, thank you guys. You can pick up the issue, PWI-online.com. You can download it right away and be, you know, scrolling through the 500 right now. You know, we got obviously the 500 entries, lots of analysis by me and some of the other writers on the PWI team, all kinds of fun facts and figures. I think there's 16 extra pages of content in this issue. So I think it's just about the biggest issue we do all year. So even people who I know don't regularly buy PWI tend to get this one. And I certainly encourage you to do that, and also encourage everybody to go ahead and subscribe. The longer you subscribe, the deeper the savings. You get half off the cover price subscribing. We got bundle packages now where you can have both the digital edition, which comes out weeks earlier than the magazine. And then in a couple of weeks, there's the magazine in your mailbox.
Nice.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Al.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Good time.
And I'm going to get the copy myself. All right, bro. Excellent. Take care, man.
Thanks, man. Bye. Yeah.
All right, Whip, I got a question for you.
Yes, let's go.
Who that's not on the top 10 is going to be on the top 10 next year, and why?
Very simple, man. Main event, Jey Uso. He is the star is on that man's head. The rocket is on his back. Whatever you want to say, it is him. He's official, man. I actually was thinking the other day, WWE is doing a really good job pushing more stars. For years, that was a problem. They only had Roman, that was it. But now it's a lot of guys. If you go to a live show, people are going crazy for it. And that's what you want. You know, I didn't get really talk about it earlier. I'm surprised Orange Cassidy made it as high as he did. But
I would agree. And I love Orange. We talked about this, you know, when we were watching, what were we watching the other day? All In? Was that All In?
All Out.
Yeah, yeah. When we were watching All Out, I was saying, you know, I really like Orange Cassidy. He's one of my favorite people in AEW, but I definitely was surprised to see him in that number 8 spot.
Yeah, so, but like I said, man, I definitely think Jey Uso. What about you? Who do you think is going to crack the code next year?
I think, and I commented this earlier on their actual Facebook post, I think based on the trajectory that they're going, the position that they're in this year, they're number 20, that bearing a really, really good X Division or Impact World title run, I think we could see Trey Miguel crack the top 10 next year.
Wait a minute. How could I forget one more person that didn't make the top 10? L.A. Knight. Yeah.
Yeah, let's actually see where he is, because I haven't looked yet.
Where is he?
He is number... Well, what do you guess? Guess, where do you think he is?
I think Joe wants to get back in. Hold on. Real quick.
Joe back? Well, that's Joe too.
You said, where does LA Knight?
Where do you think he is?
Because he got strong the last couple months. I still say around 20, 25 or something like that.
Nope.
Where?
130.
LA Knight is 130. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I'm glad I didn't know that when Al was on. I wanted to hear,
man. I know. He is below, and nothing against any of these people. They're people I love. He's below Nakamura, Strickland, Mustafa Ali, Hook, AJ Styles, Dominic Mysterio, Pac, Kingston, Fenix, Wesley, Darby, Mystical, Wardlow, Shelley, Penta, Cardona. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people he's got to go through.
Next year, he'll pass that, though. If he stays doing what he's doing now, he'll be fine.
Yeah, if he stays where he is, he's going to easily be top 25.
I mean, I don't know if you saw it on the page. I literally said, I think it's him and Cody. Obviously not WrestleMania Philly, but 2 years from now, if he stays doing what he's doing, kind of works on his wrestling skills just a little bit. I don't think he's a bad wrestler in no type of way. But, you know, sustainable wrestler for a main event type of match.
Yeah, no, he's a showman.
Matches, yeah. Because, I mean, Austin didn't do a whole lot, but he did the right things in a main event style match.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, with that being said, man, those are the two guys I definitely look forward to really taking it to the next level. You said Trey Miguel. Anybody else?
Trey Miguel. Jay, like, I mean, I brought it up earlier. I think I was surprised that Jay wasn't on the list, personally. I know they do the tag thing, and I know that he was tagging a lot, but I thought just for story purposes and popularity and influence purposes, I thought Jay was going to be on there. I'm just scrolling through the list right now. Oh, you know who I think is going to, I think they're not going to crack the top 10, but who I think is going to be in a really, really good position next year.
Who's that?
And may even beat out number 15 this year. I think Rhea Ripley could be the first woman to crack the top 10.
Okay.
I think it's done right, if WWE actually allows a couple, you know, intergender matches, mixed gender matches, whatever you want to call them, I could see it happening. I could see her, honestly, I could see her taking that North American title from Dom.
I'm glad you said that, but we're going to save that for a whole nother podcast. Because earlier, I don't know if you saw in our group chat, one of our highest rated videos of all time, he did a 3-part series. Mr. Joe Walker, there he is right there. He did an amazing 3-part series that included, it was talking about Jay Cargill versus Camille. And he just talked about Rhea possibly getting to the PWI 500 next year, which I can see that. But I want to say that for another podcast, because I really think Jay going to WWE can be a game changer. And I think that series you did with Jade and Camille before was amazing. The idea of Jade and WWE is just so much. It's just big. It's open. I think it really goes to another level, man.
You know what? You know what? That does go to another level. And then,
But see, I don't want to give them too much about Jade and Rhea right now. I want to say that for their own podcast, because they deserve one for that. You know what I mean?
I agree.
I fully intend to revisit that.
Okay.
I fully intend to revisit that in detail with Jade. Camille also. I feel like considering what we gave our audience about the aspect of Jade and Camille, and even in the stuff that we did with, where we kind of talked about them individually, I think we owe it to really celebrate Camille for what she did with that long title reign. Same thing for Jade. And then, you know, give a little speculation on what their future holds. I mean, they've earned that type of discussion in the public space.
Definitely agree. Now, Jordan, you had a question you just asked me. If you want to ask Joe right quick before we get out of here.
Oh, yeah. Before you came back, we were talking about who not in the top 10 this year do you think has a case for the top 10 next year? Whip said Mr. L.A. Knight, and main event Jey Uso. I said, I actually did three because I like to break the rules. I also said Jey Uso, but I proposed with a good singles title reign, a Trey Miguel could jump from 20 into the top 10. And then that's also where I mentioned that I think Rhea could be the first woman in the top 10.
Okay. I would like to see Santana Jackson on that list. I don't know about top 10, but see him fall in there somewhere.
Yeah, he is not on that list, so that's a good shout. That's a real good shout. Speaking of Santana Jackson, keep an eye on Northwest Championship Wrestling's Facebook page, because your NWCW Interstate Champion will be back in Michigan before the end of the year.
Yes.
That's what's up. So, that's a good question. I'm going to go with my first thought. My first thought is Orange Cassidy.
Well, Orange Cassidy's top 8 already. Do you think he'll be higher?
I would like to see him top 5.
Okay.
I know
a certain commentator that will Whip and I know that would agree with you.
I think the trajectory that he's on right now in this whole, you know, his catchphrase is that he doesn't have a catchphrase. The moment he did that, I'm like, okay, he's on to something. He's got something there. And if he continue to if he continues to use it and use it well, as he grows as a performer on the microphone and ups his opponents in the ring, his opponent quality in the ring, you know, I would love to see Orange Cassidy hoist that world title just for the sake of the years he's put in, his impact on the indie scene, bringing that persona to a major television, and then winning the world championship when he was told he was too small, he was too weird to ever be a world champion. I would just like to see him get that vindication and then crack that top five.
I wouldn't hate that. I wouldn't hate that.
Even at number five, just land at number five. I would stand up and clap, man, for that.
For sure.
I would.
Well, guys, we need to get on out of here. We want to thank everybody listening. And you know how it happens. We're going to have the audio podcast up by the end of the week and the edited version up soon. But we got to get out of here. He just told you, make sure you come check out NWCW at Troy Days this weekend, end of the month, September 29th. We have Our Time, the all-women's NWCW tournament to crown our first ever women's heavyweight champion. Well, I guess we can't say heavyweight because they're women's. Our women's champion. You gave about the cancel.
Women can be heavyweights.
I believe it's a women's world championship. It might not be recognized currently by BWI, but it is a women's world championship.
For sure, man. So for Whip Dog.
Jordan Sly Scavone.
And the word heavyweight champion, Mr. Joe Walker, a.k.a. Jolamite, the J-O-L-A-M-I-T-E, Mighty.
We will see you next time right here on the Wrestling Heroes and Insiders podcast, a.k.a. Show. Take care, guys.
Bye.